Hello dear students, welcome to this audio learning session on neural control and coordination. Let us begin. Neural system, otherwise called nervous system, is a system that controls and coordinates the body activities, conducts and integrates the information and responses to stimuli. I repeat, nervous system is a system that controls and coordinates the body activities, conducts and integrates the information and responses to stimuli. Nervous system includes brain, spinal cord and nerves. It is made up of specialized cells known as neurons. Nervous system is made up of specialized cells known as neurons. Now let's understand about the structure of neuron in little detailed manner. Neuron are otherwise called the nerve cell. Neuron is a structural and functional unit of neural system. It is composed of cell body, otherwise called cyton, dendron or dendrites, and axon. Now let's understand few points regarding cell body, which is otherwise called cyton. Cell body contains cytoplasm, cell organelles, and the cytoplasm is granular and it is containing specialized granules called Nissl's granules, which we also call it as the granular bodies. Next, dendron. They are the short fibers projecting from the cyton. Their sub-branches, we call it as dendrites, and they transmit impulses from outside the neuron into the cyton or towards the cyton. Next, axon. A long fiber which transmits impulses away from the cell body is called axon. The branching of axon is called axonite. Each axonite ends as a bulb-like structure called synaptic knob. Now let's understand regarding types of neurons. Neurons are categorized as unipolar, bipolar, multipolar. Let's understand what they are. Let's take up about unipolar neurons. Unipolar neurons contain one axon, no dendron, and they are found in embryo. Bipolar neuron is our next study. Bipolar neuron is containing one axon and one dendron, and it's found in retina of the eye. Multipolar neuron, one axon and two or more dendrons, and it's of most common type of neuron, and it's found in cerebral cortex of the brain. Now let's understand about types of axon. There are two types, myelinated axon and non-myelinated axon. Let's understand first about myelinated axon. It is enveloped with Schwann cells that form a myelin sheath around the axon. And myelinated axons are found in spinal and cranial nerves. The white colored area formed of myelinated nerve fibers is called white matter. The gaps between two adjacent myelin sheaths are called nodes of Ranvier. Next, let's understand about non-myelinated axon. Schwann cells present but no myelin sheath are there in this type of axon. The gray colored area without myelin sheath is called gray matter. They are found in autonomous and somatic neural system. So that's about the introduction and a bit detailed understanding of neuron or the nerve cell. The next episode, let's understand about generation and conduction of nerve impulses. Keep listening. I would advise all the students to go through all the episodes to get a deeper and a complete understanding about the chapter of neural control and coordination. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to the second episode learning of neural control and coordination chapter. In this episode we are going to learn about generation and conduction of nerve impulses. This happens to be one of the important concepts. Let us begin. Impulse transmission is electrochemical in nature. It consists of three steps, namely, the first step is maintenance of resting membrane potential. Second step is action potential. And the third step is propagation of action potential. Now let's understand in depth about maintenance of resting membrane potential, which happens to be the first step. Here, neural membrane contains various selectively permeable ion channels. In a resting neuron, that means, what is a resting neuron? Neuron which is not conducting impulse presently is a resting neuron. The axonal membrane is more permeable to potassium ions, that is K plus ions, and nearly impermeable to sodium ions. Also, the membrane is impermeable to negatively charged proteins in exoplasm. Therefore, concentration of potassium ion and negatively charged proteins in exoplasm is high, and concentration of sodium ion, that is Na plus, is low. That's the point of focus. That means there is increased concentration of K plus ion and negatively charged protein in the exoplasm, and concentration of sodium ion, Na plus ion, is low. Next, the fluid outside the axon contains low concentration of potassium ion and high concentration of sodium ion. This forms an ionic or concentration gradient across the resting membrane. Obviously, the gradient is created due to low concentration of potassium ion outside the axon while it is more inside the exoplasm, which is vice versa for sodium ion. The ionic gradients are maintained by active transport of ions by sodium-potassium pump. The sodium-potassium pump transports 3 sodium ions, 3 Na plus, 3 numbers of sodium ions, outwards for 2 potassium ions into the cell. That means from the cell 3 sodium ions are sent out while two potassium ions are sent into the cell. As a result, the outer surface becomes positively charged and inner surface becomes negatively charged. That means the membranes are getting polarized. The electrical potential difference across the resting plasma membrane is called resting potential. Now let's understand the next step of generation and conduction of nerve impulse, namely action potential. When a stimulus is applied, the membrane at the site A, that's a site under consideration on membrane, on the axon, on the nerve cell, becomes permeable to sodium ions. This causes rapid influx of sodium ion and reversal of polarity at that site. So now what happens to the charge? Outer negative charge and inner positive charge. Now this process is called depolarization. Earlier, outside was positively charged. Inside the exoplasm, it was negatively charged. Now the case reverses. And this we call it as depolarization. The electric potential difference during depolarization across the plasma membrane is called action potential, or otherwise which is termed as a nerve impulse. Now let's understand about the third step in generation and conduction of nerve impulse, that is propagation of action potential. Now what happens is, at sites immediately ahead, that is site B, outer surface is positive and inner surface is negative. As a result, a current flows on the inner surface from site A to site B. I repeat, at sites immediately ahead of site A is site B. At site B, the outer surface is positive and inner surface is negative. As a result, a current flows on the inner surface from site A to site B. On the outer surface, current flows from B site to site A to complete the circuit. Hence, the polarity is reversed and action potential is generated at site B. That is, action potential at site A, which was present at site A, arrives at site B. The sequence is repeated along the length of axon and impulse is conducted. The rise in the permeability of sodium ion is extremely short-lived. It's not permanent. It is quickly followed by a rise in permeability of potassium ion. Immediately, potassium ion, that is K plus ion, diffuses outside the membrane and restores the resting membrane. Thus, the fiber becomes ready for further stimulation. The next episode, let's learn about synaptic transmission of impulses. Keep listening. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to this audio learning session of BIC on the chapter of neural control and coordination. Now let's continue in this episode to understand about human nervous system, or otherwise human neural system. Let us begin. Human nervous system is divided into two parts, namely central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. Central nervous system includes brain and spinal cord. All other nerves are included under peripheral nervous system. Apart from this, we have one more set which we call it as autonomic nervous system, which includes sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system in that. But when we categorize majorly into two types, we are focusing our attention for central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. Now let's understand now about central nervous system, which includes brain and the spinal cord. First, let us get some more details about the brain. Brain is protected in the cranial cavity. And brain is having three-layered connective tissue membranes covering it, which are called as cranial meninges. Meninges consists of the outer layer called the dura mater, middle layer called the arcuinoid, and inner membrane called the pia mater. So these are the three layers of meninges. I repeat, outer dura mater, middle arcuinoid membrane, and inner pia mater. The space between the inner pia mater and the middle arcuinoid membrane is called subarcuinoid space, and it is filled with cerebrospinal fluid. The ventricles of brain, the spaces in the brain are called ventricles. The ventricles of brain are also filled with cerebrospinal fluid. Brain is being divided into three parts, namely forebrain called prosencephalon, midbrain called mesencephalon, and hindbrain also called rhombencephalon. I repeat, forebrain also called prosencephalon, midbrain also called mesencephalon, hindbrain also called rhombencephalon. Now let's get into some more details regarding these three divisions of the brain. First, let us understand about forebrain, otherwise also called prosencephalon. Forebrain is the anterior part and it consists of cerebrum and diencephalon. Cerebrum is our next concept of study in the forebrain. Cerebrum is the largest part of the brain and it contains two cerebral hemispheres which are held together by a tract of nerve fibers called corpus callosum. The cerebral cortex, which we call the outer region of the cerebrum, is not smooth but is having many convolutions and depressions. Cerebral cortex is formed of gray matter and cerebral medulla, that means inner region, is made up of white matter. I repeat, cerebral cortex, which is the outer region, is made up of gray matter and cerebral medulla, which is the inner region, is made up of white matter. So outer gray matter and inner white matter is in the brain. Cerebral cortex consists of different areas, namely motor area, sensory area, and association area. Motor area controls voluntary movement of muscles. Sensory area, also called somesthetic area, controls the functioning of sense organs. Association area is neither clearly sensory nor motor in function. Sensory area is responsible for intersensory associations, memory, and communication. Integrated activities of different centers of cerebral cortex control intelligence, memory, judgment, learning, thinking, and articulate speech. Now let's understand about diencephalon after we went through the details on cerebrum. Diencephalon is having two parts in it, thalamus and hypothalamus. Thalamus is the structure around which the cerebrum wraps. Thalamus is a coordinating center, which we call it as a relay station for sensory and motor impulses. Hypothalamus, next part of our study. Hypothalamus regulates temperature, thirst, hunger, emotions, and it secretes hypothalamic hormones, and it also controls the pituitary gland. Hypothalamus controls sleep, wakefulness, blood pressure, heart rate, etc. The inner parts of the cerebral hemisphere and a group of deep associated structures like amygdala, hippocampus, hypothalamus together constitutes the limbic system, which we also called the limbic lobe of the brain, and it regulates sexual behavior, motivations, emotions like excitement, pleasure, rage, fear, etc. So therefore, hypothalamus, also called pain pleasure brain. Next, let's understand about midbrain. Cerebrum and diencephalon belong to forebrain. Now let's understand about midbrain, which is also called mesencephalon. Midbrain is located between thalamus, hypothalamus and pons, and it contains a canal which is called cerebral aqueduct, which passes through the midbrain. Midbrain consists of four round lobes called carpora quadrigemina. Carpora quadrigemina. Their anterior part is the center of visual reflexes, and posterior pair is the center of auditory reflexes. The anterior part of quadrigemina is responsible for visual reflexes, and the posterior pair is responsible for auditory reflexes. In short, midbrain connects the forebrain to the hindbrain. Now let's understand about hindbrain, rhombencephalon. Hindbrain consists of cerebellum, pons veroli and medulla oblongata. Midbrain and hindbrain form the brainstem. Cerebellum, also called little cerebrum, is the next largest part of the brain after the cerebrum. It has very convoluted surface to accommodate more neurons. Cerebellum coordinates muscular activities and body equilibrium. Pons veroli, the next part of the hindbrain, consists of fiber tracts that interconnect different regions of the brain. Pons veroli coordinates the activities of eye and ear and regulates the respiration. Then last part of the hindbrain, namely medulla oblongata. It is connected to spinal cord. And medulla oblongata controls again respiration, cardiovascular reflexes, gastric secretions, peristalsis movement, etc. Not only that, medulla oblongata also controls salivation, vomiting, sneezing and coughing activities. So that's about the three regions of the brain. Now let's understand about the next part of the central nervous system after the brain, which is the spinal cord. Spinal cord is enclosed within a spinal canal of the vertebral column, and spinal cord is also protected by meninges, the layers. Spinal cord has a central canal which contains cerebrospinal fluid, and in spinal cord it's containing outer white matter and inner gray matter, exactly the vice versa of the brain. In the brain, cerebral cortex, the outer region, is made up of gray matter and cerebral medulla, which is the inner region, is made up of white matter, whereas in the spinal cord, it contains outer white matter and inner gray matter. Let's look into the functions of the spinal cord next. Conduction of impulses to and from the brain is a major function. Apart from this, another important function it performs is reflex action, because it is the center of spinal reflexes. Next, let's understand about peripheral nervous system. Peripheral nervous system includes cranial nerves and spinal nerves. There are 12 pairs of cranial nerves and 31 pairs of spinal nerves. Peripheral nervous system has two divisions. They are somatic neural system, which relays impulses from central nervous system to skeletal muscles. The next, autonomic neural system. They transmit impulses from central nervous system to involuntary organs and smooth muscles. And it is this autonomic neural system which includes sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic system prepares the body to cope with emergencies, stresses and dangers. It increases, the sympathetic nervous system increases heartbeat, breathing rate, constrict arteries and elevates blood pressure. Whereas parasympathetic nervous system returns the body to resting state after stressful situations, and it slows down the heartbeat, dilates the arteries, lowers the blood pressure, etc. That means it reverses all the activities which have been accelerated by the sympathetic nervous system once the emergency situation is over. Next, visceral nervous system is a part of the peripheral nervous system. It includes nerves, fibers, ganglia and plexus, by which impulses travel from central nervous system to viscera and from viscera to central nervous system back. Nerve fibers of peripheral nervous system are of two types. Afferent fibers, also called sensory fibers. They carry impulses from sense organs to the central nervous system. I repeat, afferent fibers, also called sensory fibers. They carry impulses from sense organs to central nervous system. Efferent fibers, also called motor fibers. They carry impulses from central nervous system to the muscles and glands to initiate the action. Efferent fibers or motor fibers carry impulses from central nervous system to muscles and glands. So that's about understanding on the concept of human nervous system. In the next episode, let's understand regarding reflex action. Keep listening. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to the third episode on understanding of the concept of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to understand about synaptic transmission of impulses. In the previous episode, we understood about generation and conduction of nerve impulses on the axon. Now, in the synapse, how the transmission of impulses occurs, let's have a look at it. Synapse is actually a functional junction existing between two neurons. That means synaptic knob, that's the ending of one neuron, and the commencement of the other neuron, that is the dendrites. The transmission of impulse in the synapse occurs in two ways. One is electrical and the other one is the chemical. First, let us understand about electrical synapses. In electrical synapses, the membranes of presynaptic and postsynaptic neurons are in very close proximity. So, impulse transmission is similar to the transmission along a single axon, what we studied in the previous episode. Impulse transmission is faster than in chemical synapse. Electrical synapses are very rare in human system. Now let's understand about chemical synapses. In this chemical synapses, there is a fluid filled space, which we call it as synaptic cleft, which is present between presynaptic neuron and postsynaptic neuron. The presynaptic regions have swellings called synaptic knobs, are also called buttons. These synaptic knobs or buttons contain inside them what are called as synaptic vesicles, which are filled with neurotransmitters, majorly acetylcholine, or even they may contain adrenaline. They are the neurotransmitters. I repeat, the neurotransmitters are present in the synaptic vesicles, and the neurotransmitters may be either acetylcholine or adrenaline. Next point we are going to understand is about the chemical synapse. When an impulse reaches at the axon terminal, the synaptic vesicles bind on the plasma membrane and release the neurotransmitter. So how the neurotransmitter is getting released? By the binding of synaptic vesicles on the plasma membrane, the neurotransmitter gets released when an impulse reaches the axon terminal. It diffuses across the synaptic cleft to combine with the receptors on the postsynaptic membrane. When this happens, it causes opening of ion channels, allowing the entry of ions. This generates action potential. This action potential may be excitatory or inhibitory. So that's about synaptic transmission of impulses. In the next episode, let's understand about human nervous system. Keep listening. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to this episode of audio learning of BIC. Let's continue to understand on the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to learn about reflex action. Let's begin. Reflex action is a rapid, involuntary and unconscious actions of the body brought about by the central nervous system, mainly the spinal cord, due to sudden stimulation from the receptors. For example, sudden withdrawal of our hand when we touch a hot object, or accidentally we step on a thorn, we suddenly lift the leg. The pathway of the impulses in a reflex action is called reflex arc. So what's a reflex arc? It's a pathway of the transmission of impulses in a reflex action, which is referred by the name as reflex arc. And it consists of a receptor organ, a sensory neuron, intermediate neuron, also called intern neuron, and a motor neuron, finally an effector organ. Let's understand them. A receptor organ, it is that organ which receives the stimuli. A sensory neuron, also called the afferent neuron, it transmits the impulse from the sense organ to the central nervous system, that is to the spinal cord first. An intermediate neuron, also called intern neuron, also called connector neuron, which connects sensory and motor neuron in the spinal cord. A motor neuron, which is also called efferent neuron or effector neuron, or even by the name as exciter neuron. What does it do? It conducts the impulse from the central nervous system, that is from the spinal cord, to the effector organ to initiate the response. An effector organ might be a muscle or might be a gland, is that portion which responds to the stimuli as per the instructions given by the central nervous system, that is the spinal cord in this case. Now let's understand how exactly the reflex action takes place. When there is a sudden stimulus that is being received by the receptor organ, the information is sent into the central nervous system, that is to the spinal cord first through the sensory neuron. Next, the action that has to be initiated is transmitted via intermediate neuron to the motor neuron by the spinal cord to bring about the action in the effector organ. So that is how the reflex action takes place. Okay, so that's about understanding of reflex action. I would advise the students to keep the diagram in front of you when you go through the concept of the structure of brain as well as about the reflex action. Keep listening. Keep understanding. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to the audio learning session of BIC. In this episode, we are going to continue our understanding regarding the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to discuss about sense organs, in that about the eye. Sense organs are the organs that detect the changes in the environment and convey the information to the central nervous system. As you all know, the sense organs includes ears, eyes, nose, tongue and skin. Let's understand some more information regarding the structure of eye. I would advise you students to have the picture, the diagram of the eye in front of you before you start the audio learning session on the concept of the structure of eye. Two eyes are located in the sockets of the skull, and the sockets of the skull are called orbits. The adult human eyeball is nearly a spherical structure. The wall of the eyeball is composed of three layers, namely sclera, choroid and retina. First, let's discuss about sclera. Sclera is the external layer formed of a dense connective tissue. Anterior transparent portion of sclera is called cornea. Now let's understand about the second layer, about the choroid. Choroid is bluish middle layer. It contains many blood vessels. Choroid is thin over posterior two-thirds of the eyeball, and it is thick in the anterior part, and it forms the ciliary body. The thick anterior part of the choroid forms the ciliary body. Ciliary body continues forward to form a pigmented and opaque structure called the iris. Iris is the visible colored portion of the eye. Iris has a central opening called pupil. The diameter of this pupil is regulated by the muscle fibers of the iris. The eyeball contains a transparent crystalline lens, and this lens is held in its place by the ligaments attached to the ciliary body. So that's about the second layer, choroid. Now let's understand regarding the third layer, retina. Retina is the innermost layer. It contains again three layers of cells. The innermost layer called the ganglion cells. The middle layer made up of bipolar cells. And the outermost layer made up of photoreceptor cells. I repeat, retina is having three layers of cells, namely the innermost layer of the cells called ganglion cells, the middle layer cells called bipolar cells, and the outermost layer cells called photoreceptor cells. Photoreceptor cells are of two types, namely rods and cones. These rods and cones, as the name indicates, photoreceptor is light sensitive because they have inside them the light sensitive proteins called photopigments. Let's understand the functions of cone cells first. Cone cells are phototopic. That means daylight vision and color vision is the function of the cone cells. There are three types of cones containing photopigments which responds to the red color, the green color and blue colored lights. The sensation of different colors are produced by the combination of these cones and their photopigments. When the cones are stimulated equally, a sensation of white light is produced. Next, let's understand regarding the functions of the rod cells, which is called the scotopic vision or twilight vision. The rod cells contain a purplish red protein called rhodopsin. And rhodopsin contains a derivative of vitamin A. Slightly above the posterior pole of the eyeball, there is a region where optic nerves leave the eye and the retina blood vessels enter it. Photoreceptor cells are absent in this region, and therefore that region is called the blind spot. Lateral to the blind spot area, there is a yellowish pigmented spot called macula lutea, and it's having a central pit which is called fovea. The fovea is a thinned out portion of the retina where only the cones are densely packed. It is a point of the greatest visual acuity, that's the resolution area. The space between the cornea and lens is called aqueous chamber, and aqueous chamber contains aqueous humor, which is thin watery fluid. Again, the space between the lens and the retina is called vitreous chamber, and it contains vitreous humor, a transparent gel. So that's about understanding of the structure of the eye. Wish you all the best. Keep listening. Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning session on the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to understand regarding the mechanism of vision. I would advise the students first to learn about the structure of eye before entering into the understanding of the mechanism of vision. Let us begin. Light reflected from an object enters the eye through cornea and lens. The structure of this we have studied in the previous episode. These are focused on retina and generate impulses, which we also call potentials, in the cells of rods and cones. That means rods and cone cells, they get impulses generated by the light reflected on cornea and lens. Eye contains photosensitive compounds, which we call it as photopigments, which are formed of opsin, a protein, and retinal, an aldehyde of vitamin A. Light induces the dissociation of retinal from opsin, and this changes the membrane permeability. As a result of change in the membrane permeability, potential differences are generated in the photoreceptor cells, and this potential difference generates action potential in the ganglion cells, the innermost cells, through the bipolar cells, which is present in the second layer of the eye. These are transmitted by optic nerves to visual cortex of the brain. The impulses are analyzed and the image is recognized based on the earlier memory and experience which is stored in the brain. So that's about understanding of the mechanism of vision. Keep listening, keep understanding, and all the best. In the next episode, we are going to understand about the ear structure. Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning session on the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to understand about the structure of ear. Before we start our study regarding understanding of the ear, I would advise the students to keep the diagram of ear in front of you. Then you can listen for in-depth understanding of the concept. Let's begin. Ear, which is also called the statoacoustic organ, it is an organ for hearing as well as balancing. Important information to remember is that ears are not just simply meant for hearing purposes, but also for maintaining the body balance. Ears are three divisions, namely external ear, middle ear, and inner ear. Let's understand each part of the ear in bit more detail. Let's begin with external ear. External ear consists of pinna, which we also call the earlobe, and auditory meatus, called the ear canal. So, pinna is the earlobe, auditory meatus is the ear canal. Hairs are present on the opening of the ear canal. The ear canal contains ceruminous glands, which are nothing but modified sebaceous glands, which secrete wax, which we call it as the cerumen. I am sure all of you must have seen the earwax. And earwax is called the cerumen, and it is secreted by the glands called ceruminous glands. The wax and the hair prevent the entry of foreign objects like insects into the innermost region of the ear. Ear canal ends in a tympanic membrane, which we call it as the tympanum or the eardrum. This tympanic membrane is semi-transparent membrane covered by a thin layer of skin on its surface by mucous membrane on the inside. Now let's understand about the middle ear. Middle ear consists of tympanic cavity and ear ossicles. Tympanic cavity is an air-filled space that separates the external and inner ear portions. An auditory tube, also called Eustachian canal, auditory tube is also called Eustachian canal. This auditory tube or the Eustachian canal connects middle ear to the pharynx. And this auditory tube maintains an equal pressure on either side of the eardrum. Ear ossicles include three small bones, namely malleus, incus and stapes. I repeat, ear ossicles include three small bones. What are the name of these three small bones? Malleus, incus and stapes. Malleus is attached to the tympanum. Stapes is the smallest bone of the body. Stapes is the smallest bone of the body. Focus for this point. And stapes is attached to the membrane of oval window, which is called fenestra ovalis of inner ear. Now let's understand regarding the structure of inner ear. Inner ear consists of bony labyrinth and membranous labyrinth. So two types of labyrinth, bony labyrinth and membranous labyrinth. Bony labyrinth is a cavity filled with perilymph, the fluid. The membranous labyrinth consists of regions called cochlea and vestibular apparatus. Membranous labyrinth consists of two portions called cochlea and vestibular apparatus. Now let's focus our understanding regarding cochlea, which is the organ of hearing. So which is the organ of hearing? It's the cochlea. Cochlea is a coiled structure having three canals, namely upper scala vestibula, middle scala media and lower scala tympani. I repeat, the upper canal is called scala vestibula, middle canal called middle scala media and the lower canal called the scala tympani. The scala vestibula, the upper canal, and the scala media, the middle canal, are separated by membrane called Reisner's membrane. Reisner's membrane separates scala vestibula and scala media. Scala media and the scala tympani, that is the middle membrane and the lower membrane, are separated by membranes called basilar membrane. So Reisner's membrane separates scala vestibula and scala media. Basilar membrane separates scala media and scala tympani. Scala vestibula and scala tympani are filled with perilymph and scala media is filled with endolymph. Resting on the basilar membrane and projecting into the scala media is a complex receptor organ which is termed as organ of Corti. So where is organ of Corti? It's projecting into the scala media from the basilar membrane. Organ of Corti consists of row of sensory hair cells. The hairs, which is also called the stereocilia, these hairs project upwards and lie in close contact with tectorial membrane, which projects above all of them. So that's about understanding of cochlea. Let's understand regarding vestibular apparatus. Vestibular apparatus consists of three semicircular canals and otolith organ. Of the three semicircular canals, two canals are vertical and one canal is horizontal. One end of each of the canal has a bulging end called ampulla. Inside the ampulla is a lump called crista ampullaris. The long cilia from cells of the crista are grouped together in a bundle. and this bundle is called cupula. Otolith organ consists of utricle and saculae. Utricle and saculae consists of projecting ridge called macula. Crista and macula are specific receptors in vestibular apparatus. They contain sensory hair cells. And in fact, they are responsible for equilibrium and posture of the body. So that's about understanding the structure of the ear. In the next episode, we are going to understand about mechanism of hearing. Keep listening. All the best. Hello dear students, welcome to BIC's audio learning session on the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to understand regarding mechanism of hearing. Before you actually listen to this audio session, it is advisable first to learn about the structure of ears. Let's begin. The sound waves are collected by the pinna of the ear and are directed towards the tympanic membrane. The tympanic membrane begins to vibrate. The vibrations are then transmitted to ear ossicles. They increase the forces of vibration 20 times. I repeat, the vibrations which are transmitted to ear ossicles, the ear ossicles increases the forces of the vibration 20 times. These vibrations travel through the fenestras and then enters into perilymph of scala vestibuli and then to the Reisner's membrane and to the endolymph, and from there to the basilar membrane it gets transmitted, and then to the auditory nerves and to the auditory center of the brain next. So that's about the mechanism of hearing. The audible range is 20 cycles to 20,000 cycles per second for Homo sapiens. For dogs, the auditory cycles will be up to the level of 40,000 cycles per second. And in bats, 1 lakh cycles per second will be their audible range. Next, let's understand about the maintenance of the equilibrium of the body by the ear. Maculae and cristae detect turning and rotational movement of the head. When the head is turned, endolymph in the ducts also move, first slowly because of inertia, and then even after the rotation of the head is stopped, it keeps on moving for some time. Arrangement of 3 semicircular canals at 3 angles can detect movement of head in any direction. Stimulation of hair cells is detected by the dendrites. Maculae of the utricle respond to vertical movement, and macula of saculae responds to sideways or the lateral movements. In insects, tympanum is present, and in crickets, it is on the leg. And in amphibians, reptiles and lower mammals, they have their sense of smell as Jacobson's organ of smell. So that's about the related study aspects of ears. In the next episode, we are going to understand regarding the chemoreceptors. That's about nose and tongue. And also we are going to understand about the skin. Keep listening. All the best. Hello dear students. Welcome to BIC's audio learning session on the chapter of neural control and coordination. In this episode, we are going to understand about chemoreceptors, nose and tongue, and also the cutaneous receptor, namely the skin. Let's begin. Let's start with the understanding of the nose. Nose, which is having olfactoreceptors. Nose, as we all know, is organ of smell. It contains mucus-coated receptors, which are called olfactory receptors. And these olfactory receptors are made up of olfactory epithelium. And these olfactory epithelium receive sense of smell. And it contains three kinds of cells. The neurons of olfactory epithelium extend from outside environment directly into a pair of broad bean-sized organs called olfactory bulb. These olfactory bulbs are nothing but extensions of brain's limbic system. So that's about the important points regarding the nose. Next, let's understand regarding tongue, which is having the gustatoreceptors. As we all know, tongue is organ of taste. Four primary tastes are sweet, salt, sour, and bitter. Taste buds, the gustatoreceptors plus supporting cells are seen around the bases of the taste papillae. Nose and tongue detect dissolved chemicals. The senses of gustation, that is taste, and olfaction, that's the smell, are functionally similar and interrelated. The brain integrates the different input from taste buds and a complex flavor is perceived. Lastly, we are going to now discuss about skin, which is having cutaneous receptors. Skin is the largest sense organ. It contains receptors of heat, cold, touch, pain, and pressure. So, that's about the different receptors study. Keep listening. All the best.